Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello and welcome to Lost in Science for another week. This is, of course, your weekly dose of science. Some of our favourite science stories from in Australia, across the world, wherever anyone is doing awesome stuff, we are there to report it. My name is Claire, and with me this week, I have Chris. Hello.
Hello, Claire. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so good. I'm pumped for some science. And Lyndon's with us as well.
Yeah, and I'm also pumped for science. Good to see you, Claire. Nice to be here. Very excited for science this week.
Are you? Tell us more.
I'm always excited for science. We're in the realm of National Science Week now. You know, whether you've gone to a lot of events or whether you're just coming off the back of that or you've got a few coming up. It's an exciting time.
It is. It's Science Christmas, isn't it?
That's it. That's the way. It's Science Christmas. So happy Science Christmas to everyone.
Happy Science Christmas to all who celebrate. And do you have some science Christmas for us this week?
I do, actually. Yes, I do. I've got some science celebrations. So I don't mean this to be a rude question. I'm not directing it to anyone here in particular, but who has heard of that saying, you've got a face for radio?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No one's ever said it to me. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm familiar.
Well, it's quite a famous saying that people say, oh, geez, you've got a face for radio. I've always taken it as a compliment, but a bit of Googling today made me think that's not the case. What about... Oh, geez, you've got a voice for science.
Oh.
Has anyone heard of that one?
No. Not really. Sounds unlikely.
That doesn't sound as derogatory.
No. Also, not real. That's not really a saying at all. No, probably why you haven't heard of it. But it is interesting to think about some of the famous voices that you might have heard across the radio over the last few decades that have a scientific background. And so this week I want to share some science histories of maybe a few well-known voices. They've got voices for science and they've got science in their voices. I don't know. We can brainstorm that and try to make it a saying as the show goes on.
Wow. I cannot wait to try to make You've Got a Voice for Science happen. I think that's... I mean, it should be our tagline, shouldn't it?
I think so, yeah. A bunch of voices. Yeah. We are voices for science. Yeah.
Voices for science. Yep. Yep. I'm 100% there with you, Lindo. Hey, speaking of voices for science.
Yes.
Chris, what have you got for us this week?
Look, I can't compete with that. I have something that you're going to think, oh, my God, that sounds so basic.
Try me.
But static electricity.
Ooh.
Ooh, okay.
I'm thinking balloons. I'm thinking trampolines. It's not basic at all. That's a party.
Van de Graaff generators? Is that static electricity?
Yeah, look, it sounds pretty basic stuff, but do you know how it works?
Not really.
Particles rubbing, separating?
Well, turns out no one really knows how it works. So it's one of those great ones that sounds simple, but perhaps is a bit more complicated than you might expect.
Is this from the vault of Chris doing a deep dive into physics and physicists spending a lot of time trying to understand something?
Rubbing things.
I thought you were going to say, is this from the vault of Chris's kids saying, hey, Dad, how does this work?
Saying,
It could be anywhere. This is something that's been people been looking at for thousands of years. So it's not exactly physicists just suddenly going, oh, I might examine this. This is something people have been looking at for thousands of years. So, Still working on it, but I'll tell you what we found so far this year, even.
Well, we are going to get to the bottom of it this week on Lost in Science. So on with the show.
Welcome back. You are listening to Lost in Science. My name is Lyndon, and a bit of sad news coming out of the world in the last month or so. Did you guys see Tom Lehrer was a singer in the 50s and he passed away in July?
Yeah, I did see that.
He was 97.
Good innings.
Yeah, quite a good innings. And he had some really famous songs. He was a kind of whip smart lyricist and satirist, and he wrote beautiful and hilarious and often quite rude musical pieces that are considered to be sort of legendary and inspiring for many generations of musical comedians that came after him. You know, Sammy J, the famous Australian comedian, he cites Tom as a real source of inspiration for him, and there have been a lot of other comedians and singers and songwriters who have been singing Tom's praises since he passed away. It was a really good innings, and he made a really big contribution to music.
Did he do the periodic table song? Is that?
Yes, he did. That's right, Chris. He was also a mathematician. So he was one of the songs that he was most famous for was the periodic table song, where it was to one of the songs from the Pirates of Penzance. I am the very model of a modern major general. Hard to even say the name of that, but he used the melody from that song to sing about all the elements of the periodic table, all 102 that existed at the time when he wrote that song. There's now more of them. But he was also a mathematician. He was actually like a mathematical prodigy. He enrolled at Harvard when he was 15 and he graduated when he was 18, and he sort of sang on the side.
And I just had to check then, because you said he died at age 97. I thought, 97, that sounds like that's a prime number. And indeed it was. So he managed to make it to a prime number.
Is that the goal of a mathematician? I don't know enough mathematicians well enough to ask them if they're hunting for a prime number before they pass away, or a perfect number. I don't know.
I mean, it feels on brand, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it does. So Tom Lehrer was, he kind of had this cult status as a performer, as a musician. His songs have lived on. And he did a lot of tours and concerts in the 50s. And then in about 1960, he just kind of disappeared from the music industry because...
He's like, whoa. Wow,
well, he, yeah.
There's too many elements. I can't keep up.
No, he just really loved teaching. So he went back and he taught at universities along the East Coast. And then he went to the University of California, I think. And he taught there for about 30 years. And he taught two classes, The Nature of Mathematics and The American Musical. So he taught both of those things. And he just really loved, maths. And so... That's what he did for the rest of his career. Wow. He kind of came out a few times and sung a couple of new different songs, but there was only like a couple of times in the last 50 years. And I think in the last couple of decades, he released all of the lyrics and all of the music for his songs royalty free. So he was like, anybody, just use them, take them, don't give me any money. I don't want anything to do with
I mean,
anymore.
I don't think he could copyright the periodic table of the elements, but you know.
No, no. But that was just one of his songs. He had amazing songs about, some of them were quite rude. He had quite a powerful anti-nuclear song about, you know, we'll all go together when we go, and this sort of song about there's no need to be sad at a funeral if we all get killed at the same time kind of thing, which was quite impactful. Yeah, it's quite impactful at the time. But when he passed away, it kind of got me thinking there must be other people who were scientists or mathematicians and then kind of turned to singing. I know you must be thinking of one. Come on, Claire. I know you've got one. And you can't say Dr. Cat, our famous friend, the singing scientist, Dr. Cat, friend of the show.
No, I was thinking of the lead guitarist from Queen, Brian May.
Everyone goes to Brian May, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Who did a degree in physics. Was it astrophysics?
I think
yes!
So, yeah.
Nice one, yeah. Yep, Brian May was the top of my list as well. He did do a PhD in astrophysics. Oh, well, he started doing it, and then he
got distracted.
Yeah, he had other things going on. But then he returned several decades later, and he finished his PhD. Yep.
Wow.
And some of the research that he did was on the data that he collected in the 70s when he was still a student, so that's good. Come on, there's another one. There's another big famous one.
Oh, Brian Cox.
Brian Cox.
Yes.
Oh, Brian Cox, yes.
Old Brian Cox. And he kind of did it the other way, didn't he? You know,
I was going to say, he was famous musician first.
Yep.
And then he went full cosmologist.
Yes. He was in Dare and D-Ream in the 1980s and 1990s. And D-Ream's...
What's their song?
Things can only get better.
Things can only get better. Now I've found you, and you is obviously like physics and the universe. And
yeah, but like, you know, the second law of thermodynamics would not say that things can only get better. So I don't know that it's scientifically accurate. I'm just saying.
Take that, D-Ream.
Yeah.
Plus, some of the old pictures of those bands, though, it's really hard to point him out. I sort of assumed that he would have looked the same through all of time with that hair. It's quite timeless. Yeah. But no, he looks, it's hard to pick him out of the 80s big hair lineup, actually.
Yeah, right. Okay. Were there any surprising ones that you've come across?
Well, one that surprised me, actually, there were a couple when I was exploring sort of famous entertainers or singers who had a grounding in science. Graham Chapman from Monty Python.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
The Life of Brian. In The Life of Brian. He trained as a doctor.
Oh,
did he? Yeah. Yep. He kind of was doing his training while he was working with John Cleese and then left and then came back. And he did graduate as a doctor but then didn't continue on anymore. Similarly, Jo Brand, the comedian in the UK, she trained as a psychiatric nurse and worked as a nurse for a while before transitioning into comedy. Another one that jumped out at me was Art Garfunkel.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, he trained as a maths teacher as well. So he kind of smashed into success in the late 60s with Bridge Over Troubled Water, and then he kind of took a break, went back to maths teaching for a while before moved into singing, his solo career.
There's an Australian singer-songwriter. Is it Gordy?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and she trained as a... She's a doctor.
There you go. She's great.
Yeah.
I love
Gordy. Yeah, she's awesome. So she's like... I don't know if she's still practicing, but very talented.
Maya Oroyu, who is one of the singers from Ladytron. They're a kind of...
A
techno kind of music. She's got a PhD. She didn't quite finish her PhD, but she was a PhD student at Oxford in genetics, is pretty cool. But she kind of went the other way. Well, maybe she's going to come back to it, just like Brian May. She made the decision not to complete her PhD because her music was taking off. And Dexter Holland. Does anyone know who Dexter Holland is?
The name rings a bit slight bell.
He is the lead singer from The Offspring.
Yeah,
and he was doing a PhD in molecular biology. But he went back to it in the end and got his PhD in 2017, which I think is pretty cool. So did the frontman for Bad Religion. He's also got a PhD in evolutionary biology. Anyway, so I guess the point of all of these stories is twofold: to honour the great contribution that Tom Lehrer has made in chemistry communication, really. That song, the Elements song, has been sung by people all over the world. It's Daniel Radcliffe's party trick. It's been sung by Philip Ball. I don't know if you know him, the polymath, who kind of has written about all sorts of different things. And it's credited as one of the real chemistry communication success stories, that song. Whether you agree with that or not, I'll leave that up to you and your own personal musical choices. But also, you know, if you think, oh, I'm a musician, but I really want to get into science, or I'm a scientist and I really want to get into music, it's not too late. It's not too late to find your voice for science.
Yeah, things can only get better.
One thing that I didn't say was that there's a version of the Elements song that's sung by a physical chemist called Mary Archer. She's a solar energy specialist, and she's a former chair of the Science Museum's group board of trustees in the UK. So she's a chemist and she's also a singer. And she's actually updated the song to include all 118 elements.
Wow.
Very cool. Yep. And she's still going. She's a dame now, and she still brings it out, I think, when she gives lectures every now and again. We've actually got a recording of it.
Do feel free to sing along. An on-screen crib will be supplied. There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There is yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. There's holmium, and helium, and hafnium, and erbium, phosphorus, and francium, and fluorine, and terbium, mercury, and manganese, molybdenum, magnesium, dysprosium, and scandium, and cerium, and cesium, and lead, praseodymium, and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium, and calcium, and chromium, and curium. Seventh row of the periodic table. Quite enough. So now, let's have no limmerium.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you are listening to Lost in Science.
Yes, you're listening to Lost in Science. My name is Chris, and Lyndon, Claire, you're both great science communicators. Can I ask, when you want to talk about what's good about science, do you like to focus on what science knows or what it doesn't know? Like, what's most appealing to you?
What it does know, I think.
Whereas I was going to say what it doesn't know, because I say we need you to help us answer these questions. We think we understand the world, but there's still so much to discover.
I'm afraid I'm with Lyndon on this one. I really like the mysteries, the unknown, and particularly I love when there are things that seem seemingly simple that are still as yet unexplained. A great example, my favourite example, by the way, is sleep. We still don't understand why we spend a third of our lives lying down with our eyes closed.
Because it's awesome.
I think you've just answered it, but. But yeah, there's this idea, I think only in the last 10 years they discovered this thing called the glymphatic system, which is this series of channels that is believed to drain toxins and waste products from the brain, and it's more active while we sleep, which sounds like a reasonable explanation, except that, you know, even animals that don't have brains also seem to have sleep cycles. And sleep seems to predate the existence of brains and nervous systems. So it's this mysterious thing that all animals do, and we don't know why. And I think it's incredible that something so basic as that we all do. We spend our lives doing. We don't understand. So, yeah, there are plenty of puzzles still to go. And even in, of course, in physics, there are puzzles. And today,
because physics keeps making new puzzles, a smaller thing, a small.
Even the obvious, though. This is why I want to talk about this one. I want to talk about static electricity, which is like the original electricity. Let's be honest here. You know, you learn about your static electricity and your current electricity, whatever they're calling it these days. But static electricity is the original one. It's the word electricity, like, you know, is like to electrons and that kind of stuff. That comes from the Greek word for amber, which was electron. And amber is, you can rub that against a cloth and it can get a static electric charge. And that property of it is
where
that's where electron and electricity and all that kind of stuff comes from.
Wow.
That it is the original electricity, I suppose you could put it that way.
Oh.
But we still don't really understand how it works. Since the ancient Greeks coined the term, we still are trying to figure it out. I mean, there's lots of ideas, lots of theories, but nothing concrete. So, like you mostly said, like you mentioned, like balloons rubbing against things.
Trampolines.
Mainly. Sorry?
Trampolines as well.
Trampolines, that sort of stuff. And, yeah, so you mostly see it when you've got these things like two insulators rubbing against each other in this form, right? That's kind of, so it seems to do with the property of these insulators in somehow. It happened between, say, metals and conductors. It'd be easy to explain because with sort of conducting materials, you need the electrons move around within them. They're bound by certain potential energy to the atoms in the material, and different materials have different potential energy that it takes to remove the electrons from them. So it makes sense that if you rub two materials with different potentials against each other, what they call a work function, that they might, or, you know, put them in contact with each other, that might, electrons could jump from one to another, you know, say from the one with the least energy to the one with the greatest energy.
Right. What's amber in that situation?
Well, the thing is, amber is not a conductor. It's an insulator. An insulator is a bit more complicated. And as was pointed out, I think, over 100 years ago, the idea that, you know, it's something to do with the property of materials, make the electron jump to one another when they're touched, doesn't explain why the rubbing of materials together seems to be important. Like, sure, you just put them against each other and it would work. Why do you have to rub them? And, yeah, there's lots of other things that aren't quite explained on this. So, lacking a theory, a coherent theory for how static electricity works, what they instead do is essentially measurements of to see which is the most electric materials. To put it in a simple kind of fashion. So the kind of static electricity we're talking about here is called triboelectricity, and the triboelectric effect, and tribo comes from rubbing. What they do is they create something called triboelectric series, where you basically rub different materials and you work out which one gets a positive charge, which one gets a negative charge, and you kind of rank them in order like that. So on the ones that get a positive charge, human skin I've seen is near the top of the rank. So if you rub something against human skin, your skin will gain a positive charge.
You'll get a zap. That's what happens when you're in a trampoline on a sunny day or go down a slide too fast. Right?
On the negative end, you get things like a lot of plastics are often at the negative end. So a good example, if you want to be, get a, say, a plastic pen and rub it against your skin, you can easily get a bit of a static charge on the plastic pen. If you want to do that, Linda, give it a go and then put it against some hair and you will see.
Great that, radio. Yeah. I'm rubbing a pen against
my arm. She's actually doing it, folks. You're not going to get a zap from it because it's already got the things off your skin. It's not going to put it back to your skin. I mean, So they get these, they're called triboelectricity. So basically just rank them. The trouble is that these triboelectric series where you rank from the positive to negative, it's not fixed. Things can seemingly move around. There's no set order. Sometimes you get it going round in circles as well. Like something will be, say, more positive than another material, and that will be more positive than the first one. And there's no coherence to this thing. And this part of this is because we don't really understand what's going on. And this is where I want to bring up some recent research that happened this year. A paper that was published in, I think it was February this year, It was in the journal Nature, of all things. You've probably heard of the journal Nature. Nature, one of the top journals in the world, still publishing articles on how to study electricity work. Anyway, what they did was they got a particular kind of plastic. It is polydimethyl siloxane, which is a silicon-containing plastic. It's used in contact lenses and stuff like that. And what they got different pieces of this chemical, which we're going to call PDMS, is what they called it. And they basically showed that you could essentially get different samples of it, and by essentially rubbing them against each other, you could bring your own triboelectric series out of all these samples of the same material. So it's not necessarily related to the actual chemistry of the material itself. Basically, you could do this consistently many, many times, and they would rank themselves into an order of the most positive to the most negative. And this is, again, it's the same chemical, but they, over time, if you do this enough, you will build up, they will sort themselves into this this coherent order.
Wow. They'll sort of assign themselves an order.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not just a totally random order. What it seems to be driven by is the one that has been rubbed the most or had the most contact, I think, is the most positive. I'm going to say that. So basically, the amount of contact they've had will affect their ranking in this series. And so it does seem to be this rubbing process, something in that, something physical going on is... Yeah, what's happening there? And again, this is just like, this is an experiment they did to try and rank these things. They don't have a full coherent theory. They were just doing an experiment. They did do some more examination. They looked at, they used various kind of spectroscopy on these different materials to see if the chemical structure had changed on the edge. They also used a lot of like microscopes, electron microscopes, things to examine the surface. What they found was the ones that had been rubbed more were smoother, and that the smoother samples seem to be something to do with their ranking in this series. So again, it seems to be doing something rubbing, seems to be with the changes that are happening at the kind of the nanometer scale that's affecting these things. So they don't have a set answer yet, and this is not saying this is the definitive answer, but look, it is fascinating that they're finally getting to this thing, which it sounds like such a minor thing. Like, why do we care about it? Like, we haven't known for a couple of thousand years. Why should we care? Static electricity is a powerful thing. You know, it can be a nuisance in various manufacturing processes. It can be large scale thing in the natural world. Like, you know, when volcanoes erupt, you get lightning in the volcanic plumes, and the way that the dust is scattered through the atmosphere depends on static electricity. You get explosions in grain silos due to charges building up. It's even believed that when the first planets started to form in the solar system, that the bits of dust started to stick together, firstly due to static electricity. Like, it can affect the formation of planets, even, is what I'm saying. It's a big thing, and yet we still don't understand. But hopefully by rubbing bits of plastic together... we'll start to get somewhere on this whole thing. And that's it for another episode of Lost in Science. Lost in Science is recorded for 3CR in Melbourne on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And it airs across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. We would love you to get in touch with us. You can email us at lostinsci@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, we're Lost in Science on 3CR, or on Twitter, where we're at lostinscience1. You can find us on your favourite podcast app, where if you get the chance, please give us a good rating and review, as that will raise us up in the search rankings so other people can find the science. Or you can listen to us however you listen to us now, where at the same time every week, Claire, Stu and Chris get
Lost in Science.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.